Welcome to the Community Church Podcast. This is the third week of our series, In the Beginning. This message comes from Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 19. Join us as we explore the intersection of faith and science, delving into the mysteries of our universe's origins and the profound implications of our existence. Discover how the harmony between biblical creation and scientific inquiry reveals our significant place in God's grand design. If you'd like to take notes, there's a link for that in the show notes. Thanks for joining us, and without further ado, here's Pastor Mike, the science guy.
What we're going to be looking at is the story of creation that's told in Genesis 1. And we're going to look at it step by step and looking at how it unfolds the story of creation. And we're going to contrast that with the story of materialists, with the Darwinists, and we're going to be looking at it and saying, okay, does the evidence of science concur with the story of the Bible, of creation, or with evolution? Now, even in the beginning, last week we talked about, in last week's message, that we saw that the Bible calls us to actually look in the Bible and see, not only look in the Bible, but to look in creation. That the Bible says God reveals himself in creation. So we're called to look at this. If God has revealed himself both in the Bible and in creation, we should look at both of those stories, and they should both tell the same story. They should affirm. That's what we're going to be looking at. But this morning we're going to look at the first 4 days of creation. Genesis chapter 1, we're going to be looking at the first 19 verses and what's taught there, and then look at it played out. So it's easy to find in your Bible, page 1 of the Bible. But let me begin by reading Genesis 1, starting in the first 19 verses of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse, and it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let dry land appear," and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called the seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing in which is their seed, each according to its kind, and on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kind, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to their own kind. And God saw it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs for the seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night and to separate the light from darkness. And God saw it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. May God bless the reading of his word. Let me pray. Father, I thank you for the privilege that we have to come together, Father, to not only look at Genesis and the story about how the world began, but Father, to be able to look at that part of your revelation and to look at creation and how you revealed yourself there. And Father, to see how these two forms of revelation affirm, they agree. And Father, I pray that you would bless our time, that you would speak through me and in spite of me. Father, help us to hear what your heart is, what your word is for each one of us. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, let me ask you to imagine something here to start off the message. Let's say that you were, coming in last night. You come in, you walk through the kitchen, and as you come through the kitchen, you smell something really wonderful, and you look over at the countertop, and what you see is you see a tray of cookies. And they're great. They look at these great cookies. Now I've got to say it was funny because I had people in the first service tell us, "Can we eat your sermon illustrations?" I said, "No, I need it for the second." A couple people took bites. But the second service, I said, "You could come in the second service, but there's a reason that youths all sit in the front." and they're all in the front, and they're quicker than you are, so I think I know who's going to get the cookies afterwards. So it's like, okay, there's a reason you all are up here. Now, if you find these cookies in your kitchen, I know what your first thought would be, right? You would see a tray of cookies lined up there, and you would think immediately, I wonder how these cookies came into existence. Did they spontaneously appear from a big bang in my kitchen? Or were there natural causes? Maybe there were natural causes that there was a big wind or an earthquake. Maybe some cats got in a fight in my countertop and they somehow mixed it all up and they made the cookies. I'm sure that's what happened, right? I'm sure that's what happened in my house last night. I'd mentioned to my wife that I'd like to have some cookies for today. And man, amazing, they just appeared spontaneously. Is that what you think? Of course not. No, you know intuitively when you find a tray of cookies, someone made them. In fact, it's so intuitive, it's so obvious that, you know, if you have a five-year-old child, a child comes in, they say, hey, Mom made cookies, you know, it's great. They know where it came from. It's so obvious that you would think that it would be kind of crazy if someone pressed you on it. If they said, well, no, you got to prove it. You got to prove that they were made. You know, no, it's obvious. Cookies don't happen by accident. You have to have someone who gets the ingredients, and they gather all the right ingredients, and they put it in the right amount, and then they mix it up, and they put it on the cookie sheet. They take the dough, and they put it on the cookie sheet, and they put it in the oven for the right amount of time, and they take it off, and they were all intelligent steps. None of these happened by accident. They were intelligent steps by, in a sense, an intelligent baker. Now, what would you think if I said, well, okay, let's do the research on this. So I'm going to pull in a bunch of scientists and a bunch of people that study probability, and we're going to say, what are the chances that these happen by accident? I mean, practically, is it possible that something happened that knocked the flour out of the cabinet and it just fell into the bowl? I mean, is it one in a million? Is it one in a trillion? Could it have happened? Well, it's possible, really unlikely. Well, how about then if the eggs, you know, came out of the refrigerator and somehow broke and the shells got out and the eggs got in there, and is that possible? And any one of those things, are they remotely possible? Well, even if you say they're remotely possible, well, then what's the chance that that happened and then it got all mixed up just right and then somebody put them on the cookie sheet and they got put in the oven? No, they were all intentional things. And you might say that any one of them could have a nearly impossible chance, but could it be possible? But what's the chance of all these things happening together? Again, it becomes beyond illogical to argue that it could have happened. Our initial intuition was right. No, we see a tray of cookies, and you realize that you don't need to be a scientist to realize there was a baker. Why? Because we know a couple things by experience. Many things needed to happen correctly for the cookies to be made. And not only that, none of these things are likely to happen if somebody doesn't make them happen. And so we know that intrinsically. Now, here's why we're sharing this in this message this morning. And over the next couple weeks, there are going to be times that I'm going to be talking about science. And some of it is actually going to even be a little deeper science. And you might be times like, I don't really understand that. And I'm going to try to keep it from getting too technical. But there are times that you need to also see, okay, here's the evidence. But the reason that I'm using the illustration for these cookies is that I'm trying to make an important point. And that is, when we get into the discussion of science, it can seem at times to get a little bit heavy and academic. But at the end of the day, I'm really making a point that's very, very simple. It's a point that an appearance of a tray of cookies, we can tell that there is a designer, there was a baker. A five-year-old knows that. It's that simple. Complex things do not come out of nowhere. They do not create themselves. They do not happen by accident. We know that science tells us that the universe had a beginning. We're going to see that. So if it had a beginning, is it able to create itself? And we know that, we're going to talk about, even before we talk about life, we're going to see that in a couple weeks. Just the universe itself to exist apart from life is incredibly complex, you know, infinitely more complex than a tray of cookies. And so we know that many things need to happen for the universe to be made. And none of these things are likely to happen if somebody doesn't make them happen. That's obvious. So let's kind of fill this, kind of develop this. Now, part of that, let me take a minute to review some of the ideas from last week. And last week, in last week's message, we talked about how some people think that there is a conflict between science and faith and reason. Some people will say that. And They often say, well, the Bible, well, that's about faith. Science is about facts. You know, when you talk about creation, that's a religious claim, and it's a faith matter believing it. And when we talk about evolution, well, that's facts and science. And what we saw last week is that that's not at all true. Number one, there aren't two kinds of truth. There aren't religious truth and, you know, scientific truth. There's one kind of truth. And when we talk about how the world began, either God created or created by evolution, that's a historical, scientific, religious claim, all of them. And it's either true, one's false, across the board. And so it's not only that, but then when we look at it and they say, well, this is facts and that's faith. And what one of the things we talked about last week is all our beliefs are in part based on faith. It's based on faith, which we try to prove and demonstrate. There's reasons behind our faith. And so when we think about this whole idea of evolution, what starts with a presumption that cannot be scientifically true. Many of them start with the idea that, well, there cannot be a God. The material world is all that exists. And they claim that's scientific. It's not scientific, because there's no scientific evidence for that. That's a philosophical, theological claim. There's no evidence behind it. And so when we look at this, then we have two statements of faith. A materialist, all that exists is a material world, and that we're product of nature, and creation, who says, no, God existed beforehand, and he created everything. And the controversy is not between reason and faith. It's between two different kinds of faith. Everyone has faith, and everyone has reasons for their faith. Everyone has a reason why they believe, and when they explain that. And so those who believe in materialism and evolution do so based on faith, just as those of us who believe in the Bible and creation. The debate isn't between faith and reason. It's between two positions of faith and realizing what is the reasonableness. Because while everyone has some faith, some positions of faith are far more reasonable than others. Some positions are far more aligned with reason and science and logic than others. And so what we've got to look at is look at the evidence of science and see which argument has a more reasonable faith. And I think what we're going to see this morning, I think what we're going to see in the coming weeks, is that the facts of science are very much aligned with the story of creation, with the story of Genesis. And those who believe in materialism are doing so. And we'll actually have quotes from them that basically they acknowledge the facts are all against them. But yet they believe with a blind faith that goes against reason because they don't want to accept the possibility of God. So let's start looking at these issues. The first one we're going to look at is the origin of the universe. Okay, this is right in the beginning of Genesis 1. How does it begin? Verse 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning there was a God that existed before time, before space, before anything else. There was a self-existent, all-powerful, all-knowing God. And he spoke the universe into existence, creating not only space and time, but giving it order and design. Now, compare that with another story. The materialist will basically say their story is, in the beginning, there was nothing. And then from that nothing, a singularity formed, a small spot of nothingness in the midst of nothingness. And suddenly, that singularity exploded with great force, and that explosion created everything that exists in the universe. And it was an explosion that brought order to that universe, to that matter. So it organized itself into stars and galaxies and planets and ultimately into us, into life. Now let's look at those two stories. Which one of them best aligns with the evidence? So when we look at this, we start by saying there is a universe that had a beginning. Now think even about the universe. I don't know if you ever thought about this as much, but the universe, if we step back and think about what exists, it's amazing. I mean, how many of you have ever gone out to a remote place? You know, we live kind of in a city, and so you look at the skies, you can't see that much. If you go out to a really remote place, it's way away from the cities, and if it's a dark night, no moon, and you look at the stars, it's amazing, isn't it? If you've ever done that, it's just beautiful. And they estimate that in a dark place like that, we might be able to see almost up to 2,000 stars. Now, if you add a telescope, a simple telescope you could buy, and you go into a dark place, you know, there they say that you can maybe get up to about 10,000 stars that you could see. I mean, this is just a basic telescope that's taken, and you see all these stars out here, and it's amazing. But our eye cannot come close to seeing all the stars that exist. Astronomers estimate that in our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, it contains 400 billion stars. I mean, it's an amazing idea. And not only that, but we aren't the only galaxy. With improvements in technology, we can now see beyond our galaxy far further than ever before. And what we keep doing is scientists keep looking for the edge of the universe and they can't find it. Every time you go further, there's more galaxies out there. The best illustration of this is something called the Hubble Extreme Deep Field, which it uses the Hubble telescope and takes multiple pictures and then puts them together in this composite picture. Now, here's what I want you to see. This is the extreme field here, Hubble Extreme Deep Field. This is not our universe. This is beyond our universe. All these are not stars. They are galaxies. And so what they're finding is when you look out there, we're not sure because everywhere we go, there's more. But as of now, they estimate they can see by estimation 200 billion galaxies. So if you think about, okay, well, we've got 400 billion stars in our galaxy, 200 billion galaxies, and you multiply those together, and you get a huge number that I can't even start to imagine. You know, you get a really, really, really big universe. It's amazing. And now think about the size of that universe. All right, if we think about the size, because universe is so vast, we got to think in terms of light speed. Okay, you all know the speed of light, right? Okay, just in case you don't. Okay, here's where we go. We've got the speed of light. It's 1,806,000 miles per second, which is, you know, 670,616,200 miles per hour. I mean, that's incredibly fast. And so to give you an idea, the Earth is 93 million miles from the sun. It takes about 8 minutes from the light to get from the sun to the Earth. It's about 43 minutes to get to Jupiter. It takes about 5.5 hours to get to Pluto. And now, do you know how long it takes for the light to get to the nearest sun? 4.2 years. That's the nearest next sun, next star. The Milky Way is estimated to be 120,000 light years across. Now, imagine that context. The nearest galaxy is 2.9 million light years away. This is enormous. And so here you have this universe that is just stretched out over billions and billions of light years beyond what we could imagine. And it's all this, you know, the huge stars, all the everything that is there, and consider the vastness of it. And what does God say and tell us in Isaiah chapter 40? Who, God, has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and marked off the heavens with a span? God looks at it and says, how's big the earth? Here's the oceans. How big's the heavens? Oh, about this big. That God holds these things together. He's the creator. That's God. That's what the Bible teaches. But if you don't believe in the Bible, where do these things all come from? Now, according to evolutionary scientists, up until the mid-1900s, they all believed that the universe was eternal because they're materialists. So there is no God, so the material had to exist. It couldn't have had a beginning. It's existed forever. And so they believed it had no beginning, and the story of evolution is how material has organized itself. In the early 1920s, there was a Belgian priest who was also a scholar, and he looked at the story of creation in the Bible. And from the Bible, he concluded that God, he thought that like we would find that God created the universe in a single spot, and they flung the stars out, and he said when we are able to see it, he predicted that we would find that the universe is expanding. Now, this was mocked. This was mocked by evolutionary scientists. They gave it a name. They gave it a mocking name. They called it the Big Bang Theory. It was the evolutionists, the materialists said, oh, what a crazy idea. They mocked it. Why? Because the universe had to be eternal, according to them. And to give you an idea of how this is viewed, let me give you a quote from a guy, Sir Arthur Egerton, who was a very famous scientist, winner of a Nobel Prize. He was a pure materialist. He was the guy that was famous for saying that the cosmos is all that there is, ever was, or ever will be. So that's what he believed. In 1931, here's what he wrote. Philosophically, the notion of a beginning is repugnant to me. I should like to find a genuine loophole. I simply do not believe that the present order of things started off with a bang. The expanding universe is preposterous, incredible. It leaves me cold. Now, why is he arguing against that? He's arguing against it. He's offended because if the universe is expanding, that means you go back in time and it contracted and it started in a single place. And that means that it's not eternal. And so he's trying to figure this out. And actually, this was written after we started to get evidence of the universe expanding. He's arguing against the evidence. Why? Because he doesn't want there to be a universe that had to have a beginning, because that implied that you had to have a beginner. And so what you did is you had people like him who denied the evidence for about 20 years. They argued against the evidence of things expanding. They disagreed, but the problem was in the late 20s and the 30s, you had Edwin Hubble, some of you might have heard of him. He started to use these huge telescopes and looked out in the sky, and he found this evidence that the universe was expanding, the stars were moving away. So they argued against it, they denied it. And finally, when they couldn't deny it anymore, they came up with another idea. They talked about the rebounding universe. And so they had this idea, well, it's expanding, well, but then its gravity is going to pull it back in, and it's going to come back in, and it's going to explode again, so therefore matter is still eternal. Well, then in the 1980s, they found out that actually the universe is not only expanding, it's accelerating. So that's impossible. It destroyed that. So they were proven wrong. These people that for decades had been arguing, matter is eternal, it did have no beginning, they mocked the idea of God creating from a single point. They were proven wrong, so what did they do? Did they say, we're wrong, maybe universe had a beginning, let's look to God? No, because they started with the assumption there is no God. And when the facts prove us wrong, we just have to change our theory to prove what we already know to be true. And so what did they do? They now said, well, the Big Bang idea that we mocked, that's our idea. So many of us, when we hear the Big Bang, we think that's an evolutionary concept. It was actually mocked by evolutionists. It was a creationary concept of God's creation. But now they're saying, no. And as we said before, their story, in the beginning, there was nothing. And from that nothing, there was a singularity that formed. And out that spot of nothingness, there was an explosion, and it created everything in the whole universe. But where did the singularity come from? We don't know. What is a singularity? We don't know. How did it come into existence? I don't know. But there was nothing, and it exploded, and it created everything. Does that make sense? Is that logical to you? Okay, let's evaluate it by science, by simple laws of science and logic, what they call the laws of causation. This is widely accepted in science and in logic. Okay, we know that from science, the universe is not eternal. It had a beginning. And logic would seem to tell us that it had a cause. But they argue, no, it created itself. I mean, there was nothing, and then there was a singularity that created itself, and somehow it did this. Now, is that what we see in nature? Again, what is the law of causation? It's simply this. Everything that had a beginning had a cause. We know that. That's a scientific truth. Every time we see it, it's never not true. Well, then science proves that, even though you don't want to see it, the universe had a beginning. And if this is true, and if the universe had a beginning, therefore, the universe had a cause. It had a creator. The laws of science and nature all point toward that. Now, are we really to believe, well, there was this story, there was nothing, and then that nothing exploded, and an explosion of nothing created everything, and that's, that everything that it was created by an explosion somehow organized itself so that it formed not only planets, but and allowed the development of life, and then we've evolved to the point where we can understand the rules of nature that prove that whole theory is wrong. You see how crazy this is? And as we said earlier, both evolutionists and creationists, they have faith, but which one is more reasonable? Is it more reasonable to believe that there is an all-powerful God that existed outside of nature and that he spoke things into existence, or is it more reasonable to believe that there was nothing and that nothing somehow created everything? Now, we can't get into the heavy science of this, and there's a lot of science to back up what I'm saying. But again, remember, the core issue of it is really simple. Did these cookies make themselves? I mean, this is what it really comes down to. We know by experience when you have something that's organized like this, it doesn't make itself. It doesn't suddenly appear. And yet, for me to argue that the cookies made themselves would be crazy. And yet some people now will call it scientific knowledge to argue that nothing created everything that there is. And that's a faith that goes against logic. It's a faith that goes against reason, against science, against evidence. That's a faith that isn't a reasonable faith. I don't have that kind of faith to believe something that everything that I can test tells me it's false. But it's not just about where the cosmos came from, the universe came from. It's also, we have to take into consideration that it's incredibly organized. There's order. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if it was a Big Bang, I mean, your experience, when you blow things up, does it organize it and create order and structure? I mean, in my experience, if something is blown up, it gets disordered. That's generally what we see. But what we see is an incredible order in the universe. And what we're going to see in a moment, as scientists have discovered, is that for the universe to be able to work, for it even to be able to exist, there are these physical laws, dozens of physical laws, that have to be perfect or the universe literally doesn't work. They refer to this as the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, you think of it this way. Think of a radio. And if you have a radio and you've got, you know, maybe 100 things, and if you've got to tune in just the right place for us to get the radio reception. Now, here's what they're going to talk about. It's not only a radio, it's a panel. And it's got dozens of dials, and it's not hundreds, it's millions and trillions of spots. And everyone has to be in the exact place for it to work. If one of the dials is out of place, the whole thing doesn't work. Now, this gets a little heavier, so I'm gonna lean on a video, a little video, to kind of explain it a little bit. Hopefully they do it better than I do.
From galaxies and stars, down to atoms and subatomic particles, the very structure of our universe is determined by these numbers. These are the fundamental constants and quantities of the universe. Scientists have come to the shocking realization that each of these numbers has been carefully dialed to an astonishingly precise value, a value that falls within an exceedingly narrow, life-permitting range. If any one of these numbers were altered by even a hair's breadth, no physical, interactive life of any kind could exist anywhere. There'd be no stars, no life, no planets, no chemistry. Consider gravity, for example. The force of gravity is determined by the gravitational constant. If this constant varied by just 1 in 10 to the 60th parts, none of us would exist. To understand how exceedingly narrow this life-permitting range is, imagine a dial divided into 10 to the 60th increments. To get a handle on how many tiny points on the dial this is, compare it to the number of cells in your body, or the number of seconds that have ticked by since time began. If the gravitational constant had been out of tune by just one of these infinitesimally small increments, the universe would either have expanded and thinned out so rapidly that no stars could form and life couldn't exist, or it would have collapsed back on itself with the same result: no stars, no planets, and no life. Or consider the expansion rate of the universe. This is driven by the cosmological constant. A change in its value by a mere 1 part in 10 to the 120th parts would cause the universe to expand too rapidly or too slowly. In either case, the universe would, again, be life prohibiting. Or another example of fine tuning. If the mass and energy of the early universe were not evenly distributed to an incomprehensible precision of 1 part in 10 to the 10 to the 123rd, the universe would be hostile to life of any kind. The fact is, our universe permits physical, interactive life only because these, and many other numbers, have been independently and exquisitely balanced on a razor's edge. Wherever physicists look, they see examples of fine-tuning. The remarkable fact is that the values of these numbers seem to have been very finely adjusted to make possible the development of life. If anyone claims not to be surprised by the special features that the universe has, he's hiding his head in the sand. These special features are surprising and unlikely.
Now, these are just touching on a couple little examples, and there are many more, but think about gravity. He said, you know, 1 into 10 to the 60th part, that's 10 with 60 zeros. And how small that is, if the universe really is 13 billion years old, then that means that the number of seconds since in 13 billion years is 10 to the 13th power, significantly smaller than this. But it had to be that exact, or the universe wouldn't exist. Or he talked about the expansion rate of the universe. That's an even bigger number. And somebody even said afterwards, it's like, well, let's say go play the lottery, and what's the chance of playing the lottery? He said, no, it's like you go to play the lottery 100 times and you had to win every time. What's the chance of that happening? And that would be a much smaller number than this. And if it did happen, you knew that the lottery was fixed. It would be no question about it. We know that. And so there's these dozens of things that when you look at that, what do they say? The universe, it couldn't have happened by accident. It's organized. There's a guy, a scientist, Fred Hoyle. He was the guy that invented the term the Big Bang. And he did it mocking the idea of the expanding universe. He was an atheist. And later on, as he looked at this, and he said, okay, well, let me try to, and again, it wasn't like, well, I'm proven wrong, maybe there is a designer. He instead said, okay, well, now I'm going to try to own the Big Bang. Well, it really happened, the singularity. Well, and then he's confronted with all these numbers and how amazingly impossible it is. And look at what he said. Now, this is an atheist who does not believe in God, and here's his conclusions. He says, a common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a superintelligent intellect is monkeyed with the physics as well as chemistry and biology. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion beyond question. So he's sitting there saying, all the facts point toward this, all that point towards a designer. It's beyond question, but I don't believe it. Because I know that there can't be a God. So even fact, all the fact that there's all this evidence, I still choose to believe and have a faith that totally goes against science, against reason. This is, they're scientists saying this. See, we've got to ask, what is a common sense interpretation? A common sense, when we look at this, an evolutionist will try to explain it, and some will say, well, it just proves that we're the anthropic principle. It proves that it happened, so we're really, 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 really lucky. No, the fact is that it proved that it couldn't have happened by accident. Or now the new thing is the multiverse theory. Now, some of you might think, oh, yeah, multiverse, Spider-Man, and this and that, superheroes, different color capes. And actually, if you want to know what the multiverse theory is, those that believe it, it's actually out there. They're saying it's a multiverse possible. And the whole argument is that you have all that, you have every universe that could exist, does exist, so that there's one that works. Every other universe that does exist doesn't work. And so it's not like there are different people, we have different stories that we have. It's like, no, everything else, the universe doesn't work. There's only one that actually exists. And there's no evidence for that. So where did it come from? You have people that are trying to say, how do we explain it without God? So therefore, we'll come up with the multiverse idea. Now, how did the multiverse come from? How did you have a Big Bang that started all the universes? There's no evidence. Is that logical? Is that reasoning? Does it go with us? No. The other option is you go back to Genesis, and you say it's possible there is a God, and if there is a God, and Genesis 1 said in the beginning there was nothing but God, and he created the heavens and the earth, and he brought order and design. That fits. That fits all of it. Let's go back to Fred Hoyle, that quote. Again, this is an atheist saying it. A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests a super intellect has monkeyed with the physics and well as chemistry and biology. Like God, a common sense. This is common sense. And what he's saying, here's someone who rejects it and says it's so overwhelming that it's beyond question. But yet he continues to believe in spite of the evidence. As followers of Christ, as those who believe in the Bible, I want you to realize heavens declare God's glory. The science is affirming everything that God is saying. We have science. We have the reasonable faith. One more thing we're going to look at this morning, and that's the amazing design of the earth, of the planet that we live on. Genesis 1 tells us that God not only created the heavens, he created the earth. And then if you look at Genesis, basically, up through 19, the first 4 or 5 days, it's God organizing the earth. So he separated dark and light. He separated waters from the earth and the skies and created plant life. And he created land. And he organized the solar system and the sun and the moon and the stars. And he did a special work of creation on the earth. And the question is the earth special? Are we just the insignificant and common speck that is one of the many, many planets that exist in this huge universe? Or are we special? And what Genesis tells us is that we are special. God did an incredible work of creation. And that's not the story of materialists. You see, they look at the vastness of the universe and they say, well, because it's so vast, there's got to be a lot of life. In 1966, Carl Sagan announced that there were two important criteria for planets to support life. You need to have the right kind of sun, and you needed to be the right distance from that star. And he said, because there's so many stars out there and so many planets, he said that there are going to be billions and billions and trillions of planets that are able to support life. And it was that idea that led in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, all this science fiction, all this books and stuff about aliens, because we expected to find all kinds of alien life, because life is easy to form. In fact, they set up something, the SETI project, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and they set up these huge dishes that were out there trying to search the sky for some kind of intelligent communication, and they're listening. And they listened, and they got nothing. And finally, it was a government-funded thing in 1993. The government pulled the funding. Private funding has continued. And to this day, we've heard nothing. Now, why? Well, what's part of what happened is that we expected that there would be all this life and all these planets. But then over time, scientists have discovered it wasn't two things that required a planet to be able to support life. It was, 10. Well, then it was not 10. It was 20. And then it wasn't 20. It was actually 50. Well, now it's estimated at around 200. And even a SETI proponent, one of the guys in charge of it, gave in an interview, said, in light of the new findings and insights, it might seem appropriate to put our excessive euphoria to rest. Basically, we're not going to find life. We should quietly admit that the early estimates are no longer tenable. What we thought we were going to find, it doesn't fit the science. What we need to realize is actually, it's not that there are billions and billions of planets with life. When you have 2,000 things and how unlikely that is, it actually is impossible that there's one planet that exists if it just is by chance. It shouldn't exist at all. See, our planet is a miracle in a sense that we have this planet that is able to support life. And again, from a scientific accidental perspective, it should not exist at all. Now, again, there's some heavy science to this. Let me go back to another video that hopefully explains it a little more simply.
We find that we need to be at the right location in the galaxy, that we're inside the circumstellar habitable zone of a star, that we're in a planetary system with giant planets that can shield the inner planets from too many comet impacts, that we're orbiting the right kind of star that's not too cool or not too hot, that we're on a planet that has a moon that can stabilize the tilt of its axis, that we're on a planet that's a terrestrial planet, a planet that has a crust that's just thick enough that it can maintain plate tectonic activity, but it has enough heat in its interior that it's still circulating its liquid iron core so it can generate a magnetic field, that it has an atmosphere that has enough oxygen to allow for complex organisms to survive, that it has enough water and enough continents to allow for the diversity of life or an active biosphere that you need to support complex creatures such as ourselves. All these factors have to be met at one place and time in the galaxy if you're going to have a planet as habitable as the Earth, which you need for complex and even technological life.
In an attempt to estimate the probability of attaining this combination of factors simultaneously, some researchers have developed equations assigning a conservative 1 in 10 value to each factor deemed necessary for advanced life.
If every element has to be there at the same time, you have to multiply the probabilities. And that's what makes the probability at the end so small. You've got 10% of this and 10% of that, and these things rapidly multiply to exceedingly small numbers. The numbers on the order of 10 to minus 15, which is 1/1,000th of 1/1,000,000,000,000. And it's a number like that that you have to compare to the 100 billion stars that are in the galaxy. 100 billion is a very large number, but 1,000th of a trillionth is much, much smaller. On their face value, these probabilities are speaking. What they're telling us is this can't happen, or this is very unlikely to happen in the galaxy. And that's where the evidence is pushing us.
The number 1,000th of a trillion is based on 50 factors. There's 200. The number is much bigger. And when you look at that, what it says is that the fact that life exists on one planet by accident is beyond impossible. And when we look at this and we say, is it possible that one or two or some of these things? Yeah. Is it possible that the flower fell into its own, that something happened with one or two? It's unlikely, but is it possible? But what is the likelihood of all these things happening? You know, I mean, cooking cookies, you know, it's got, what, 8 things together, and there's a couple things to get mixed together. There's a couple steps. And the chance we know that of this just appearing, that this being an accident, I mean, that's of course you look at it and say, no, it would be silly to argue that that's by nature, but that's by accident. And yet somehow, again, you have people that will look at this and they will talk about, look at the world and oh, it happened by accident. My friends, that makes no sense. It goes against logic. It goes against science. And yet people choose to believe, not because of the evidence, but in spite of the evidence, because they don't want to believe in God. Now, I hope that this is, if you're here and you're not sure, I hope that this is an encouragement. I hope that please engage in the discussion. I would love to talk with you. I've got tons more information that we, if you want to go deep, I'll let you go as deep with you as you want to go. If you are here and you are struggling, if you've heard things and you say, I don't know whether I'd believe, man, I'd love to talk with you. I'm going to recommend resources in the coming weeks, and I'd love to go deeper with you. But for all of us, I want you to have confidence in the reason for your faith. That we just don't believe something because God says it, and it's close your eyes and believe. No, it's we believe something that is true. And it's true not only spiritually and in the Bible, it's true in science, it's true. Every aspect of God's revelation affirms it. But it also tells us something important about us and about our place in God's universe. Because we can look at this and we can say, from an evolutionary perspective, you've got this huge universe and it's so big and, you know, billions of years, light years across and you know, billions of stars and planets. And how does God see us? Are we nothing? Are we insignificant? Are we just a speck in the vastness? Or, well, look at what Psalm 8 says. It says, when I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, and the moon and the stars that you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? And he's sitting there saying, there's this vastness, but you know what? God, you care for us. We're significant to you. And the story of creation is a story of God creating ultimately the culmination of his creation, man, and saying it is good and he cares about us. But that's not the story of evolution, of materialism. No, in the story of materialism, what is man? Some of you might be aware of the guy Bill Nye. You know, some of you might have heard of him. Sometimes he's known as Bill Nye, the other science guy that, you know, kind of copies some of my stuff, I know. But when 2010, he was named Humanist of the Year. And as an acceptance speech, he explained his views. This is what he said. He said, I am insignificant. I am just another speck of sand, and the earth is really in the cosmic scheme of things just another speck, and the sun an unremarkable star, nothing special about the sun, and the sun is another speck, and the galaxy is a speck. I'm a speck on a speck orbiting a speck amongst other specks amongst still other specks in the middle of specklessness. And then he summed it up, and this is his quote, I suck.
Beautiful.
That's what he said. And later in an interview, he said that his view is that humans suck, coming from the idea that from an evolutionary perspective, he said, I've learned that as I learn more about evolution, I realize from a nature's point of view, you and I aren't such a big deal. Humankind isn't that special. There's no meaning. There's no significance. We're just a speck on a speck in the middle of a speck. That's where that belief system leads. But it's not what the Bible teaches. And there may be some of you here that you think, okay, well, am I valuable? Am I, I suck. I'm nothing. I'm just a speck. Do I matter to anybody? And here's why we want you to realize you matter to God. You are not an accident of nature. You are not lost in the cosmos or even in the billions of people here on earth. You matter to God. You are of significance. You are importance to him. The Bible teaches that each one of us are a part of a plan. We are created for a purpose. That the story of creation isn't God loving nature, it's God loving us and creating a world where we can live so that we can know him. And then the whole story of the Bible is God's pursuit of us so that he can know us. So you get into the Gospel of John and it begins talking about creation, but Jesus Christ is the creator. And Jesus Christ, the creator, then came to mankind. Look what it says in John chapter 1, verse 9. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world, though the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. The creator came into the world, actually came into his creation. Why? Because we were separated from him by our sins, and he came to die on the cross for our sins, that we could know him. So that the purpose is to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh or the will of man, but of God, that we would be children of God. My friends, if you're here today, you are not a speck. You don't suck. You are not meaninglessness. You are created by God for a relationship with him. He loves you. And the story of the Bible is God pursuing you. Even as we've rejected God, rebelled against him, God says, no, I pursue you. I want a relationship with you. To the point where the creator took on human flesh and moved into his creation and then took on death for us. so that all who would receive him, who would acknowledge our need, ask his forgiveness, we can have a relationship with him. Have you ever done that? And if you have done that, you understand how incredibly valuable and precious you are. That the Creator who measures the heavens with the width of his hand like this says, I love you. You are important to me. I want a relationship with you. Understand that. Live into that. That's your identity. That's the relationship God calls us to.
If you have a question about the message, Community Church, or Jesus Christ, send us a text to 330-400-3242. You can learn more about our events and community groups at ccpl.life/connect. There you can also send in a prayer request. We would love to pray for you. Have a blessed Lord's Day, and we'll see you on Sunday.